This is an iHeart podcast.
It's Veterans Day, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about some government crime problems, but also we're going to talk to veterans about their service. Let's do a nice Veterans Day honoring, shall we? On I'm Right. It's Veterans Day, and before we get into the politics, I just thought I should open up by saying, one, happy Veterans Day. I know that's pretty cliche at this point in time, but what does that actually mean? Oh, we get to enjoy this wonderful country of ours because brave men have been willing to fight and die to keep it free, to keep it prosperous. It's not a small thing at all. Happy Veterans Day. And let me speak to the veterans really briefly before we get into politics. Obviously, thank you for your service. I got that. I'm with you. And I got all the texts today too. Hey, thank you for your service. But beyond that, I want to remind you as a veteran that you may not wear the uniform anymore. I certainly don't. Too old and bald and fat and gray and not a Marine. You know, I guess always a Marine, but you know what I mean. You may not wear the uniform anymore, but you are still under obligation. You still have a duty to your country. And so don't shortchange yourself by thinking, I'm just this now, I'm just that. That's what veterans tend to do, especially when they get depressed later on in life. They were young, guns, doing cool things, and then later on in life, it's, Jesse, I'm just a delivery man. Jesse, I'm just this. I'm just an accountant. No. You're a citizen who has a duty to his country. You are not finished yet. Keep putting in the work. Keep fighting for your country in different ways, but keep fighting for your country. All right? All right. Now, I want to talk really quickly about this FEMA situation because it leads me to something bigger. Right now, we have the Trump transition. We have the Senate leadership race. We're going to get to all these things, but I wanted to hit this off the top. The Daily Wire, they deserve all the credit in the world. It's their story. They broke it, and it has most definitely since been confirmed that there was an employee at FEMA, a FEMA official, who told hurricane relief workers to skip homes that had Trump signs on them. They were going around, checking in with these homes, getting people signed up for some sort of relief, some sort of government relief, some sort of government help. And this lady sent out a memo and apparently said it in a meeting. Hey, if they have Trump signs, screw them. Skip over the house. And it was done. From the reporting, it looks like it was 20 houses at least with Trump signs didn't get any help because some evil witch communist with FEMA told the workers to skip those homes. Now, why would I bring up a story like this? One, it is a big story. I wanted to bring this up. But two, I wanted to explain something we talk about a lot. Fear and pain. Fear and pain are not things we like to dwell on at all. They're ugly things. But fear and pain are the only thing communists understand. Communists are religious zealots. As we've talked about before, you need to think of them more like radical Islamists than anything else, more like jihadi terrorists. Well, jihadi terrorists really only ever responded to fear and pain. Nothing else works because they're religious zealots. These communists are the same. This FEMA employee, she was fired and all that. That's good to go. So I'm going to say something, and maybe you'll think it's extreme or harsh, but I really genuinely mean it. I'll explain why in a moment. Firing is not close to enough. She needs to be arrested immediately. She needs to be put on trial, and the trial needs to be public. It should be live streamed, covered by multiple media outlets. When they describe her disgusting sins, she should be publicly humiliated. She should know that if she is ever let out of prison, which she should not be, that she should have to change her name and location because the shame of what she's done is so evident on her. And then after a public trial, a fair trial, she should probably be sent to prison for the rest of her natural life. Now, maybe you're saying that's extreme. It's some hurricane aid. No, I think you need to understand exactly what we have right now. We have a government full of these communists, full of them. Government agency after government agency, from the FBI to FEMA to this, to that, full of these rabid little animals who will use their power in a way that is not lawful. They will use their power to attack their political enemies. Using your position with FEMA to deny aid to people who you disagree with politically is so deeply evil that it shows this human being is not fit for public consumption. And so what do I want? I want every other communist currently sitting in government, and there are many, 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 many of them, I want them to look at what happens to this woman, and I want them to be afraid. I want them to be afraid that one day that knock may come on their door and that public trial may happen to them. And maybe you think that's too harsh. They don't have any other way they will learn. To be honest with you, firing is not even close to enough. That doesn't instill fear or pain in the communists who are there. Communists must feel pain. If they do not feel it, if they do not fear you, then they will abuse you without end. It is sadly the only language they understand. And so going forward, as we have talked about before, this is not the first time I've said it, you will know the United States of America is on the right path, the path to cleaning out the corruption, the path to getting this government right, when government people start going to prison. Not firings, not resignation, not relocation, not early retirement, no. All those things are just fine. No. Prison. Crimes have been committed against the American people by this government, and government must go to prison. Government people. Which brings me, actually, that brings me perfectly into the Senate leadership fight right now. So I warned, if you watch the show, you're not Johnny come lately to this. You've known this is coming. I've been warning you about trouble coming from the United States Senate. So allow me to explain. Let's take a step back on a macro level and talk about this Trump transition and the Trump administration and the Senate and the system and leadership. So let me just lay this out as clearly as I possibly can. Donald Trump and Donald Trump's team, if we're to believe what we're seeing right now and what we're hearing, they are on a mission. They believe the American people have given them a mandate to fix a lot of things and to clean out a system that is evil and corrupt and broken, a system that no longer serves the American people. And if you look at Donald Trump's appointments, which we'll get to those maybe in a moment, but if you look at Donald Trump's appointments, it looks like he's completely committed to that. In fact, you know what? Let's get directly to that. I want you to watch Tom Holman. He sat down with 60 Minutes. He was being asked about illegal immigrants and this and that. And this kind of commitment is exactly what we need.
We have seen one estimate that says it would cost $88 billion to deport a million people a year.
I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Is that what American taxpayers should expect?
What price do you put on national security? Is that worth it?
Is there a way to carry out mass deportation without separating families?
Of course there is. Families can be deported together.
That's exactly what we need. Trump looks committed this time to getting it done right. He announced over the weekend, Nikki Haley need not apply. Mike Pompeo, sorry, no more deep state here. But that brings me to the Senate leadership fight. You think, and I think, that the Trump team, that Team Trump has a mandate to make major changes, and you're correct, I'm correct. The American people went to the polls and wiped Democrats out because the American people are sick of how this evil government has been running things. They're sick of a lot, and they want things to change. Okay, we're all on the same page, right? We're all on the same page. However, there's something we have to understand. We've got to get through this through our heads. GOP leadership, they are locked with the communists in this. They don't want anything to change. You want everything to change. You want the corruption cleaned out. You want the evil cleaned out. You're sick of the FBI. You're sick of an open border. You're mad about this and mad about, and you are correct about all those things you're mad about. But if you were in GOP leadership, one of these swamp rat types, the corruption is your entire existence. Think about them as if they are criminals. Think about them as if they're Italian mafia people. They're mobsters. They don't want some kind of crackdown on the mob. The mob is their entire life. Being a swamp rat is how guys like John Cornyn and John Thune exist. And I said all that to say the Senate leadership fight, there's going to be a silent vote on Wednesday. The Senate leadership fight is not a small thing. It's a huge thing, because if we go elect John Thune or John Cornyn as the new Senate majority leader, well, here's the truth. They are going to fight Trump in every way possible because they don't have the mandate you think they have. They will see themselves as having a mandate to stop him. You think John Cornyn, John Thune want to rein in the defense contractors? You think John Cornyn or John Thune are going to get the FBI in line? They will see themselves as the sword and shield of the government, not the sword and shield of you. And this is not me sitting here telling you that Rick Scott is some kind of saint, because he's the only other option. I know his gun control past is gross. I'm not telling you there are great options, okay? Right now there are three, but it is a big, 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 big deal. Mitch McConnell, let me just explain it this way. You've seen everything Mitch McConnell has done to try to impede Trump. He's done everything he possibly can. If it's John Cornyn or it's John Thune, it will be a continuation of that. And that is a really big deal when you consider Donald Trump is going to need Senate confirmations. You know, you don't just, as president, you don't just get to say, hey, you go be my attorney general. You're the one I pick. No, your attorney general, oh, you get to choose one you want, but then he has to get an up or down vote in the United States Senate. What if Donald Trump, what if he picked a reformer for AG, a man who decided the FBI needed a little house cleaning? Do you think John Cornyn would be okay with that? What's about to happen Wednesday is a big deal. It matters a lot. Again, you think, and Trump thinks, there's a mandate to change the government. John Cornyn and John Thune believe there's a mandate to keep it exactly where it is. Remember that. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Now, before we get to our veteran-heavy show, we got old veterans tonight, since it's Veterans Day. Let's talk about sleeping well. I love sleep. I sleep so good. And if there's ever a night where I feel like I'm not gonna, or maybe I didn't get a good night's sleep the night before, I reach for one thing, Dream Powder from Beam. It's natural, you see. Whenever you take the other stuff, oh, you sleep well, but then you wake up and you feel like garbage, don't you? Dream Powder from Beam, you wake up and feel great. That's the difference. It's not the sleeping, it's the waking. You wake up, slept good, feel great. It's a cup of hot chocolate, up to 40% off. Go to shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly and enjoy. We'll be back. Well, we'd be remiss if we didn't take a little time to celebrate the true birthday that has happened out there, the birthday number 249 of my beloved United States Marine Corps. And I figured a good way to celebrate that would be bringing in Wade Miller, Marine Corps combat veteran, also executive director at the Center for Renewing America. Wade, why in the heck did you go join the Marines? There were all kinds of other more feminine branches.
Well, I was hungry for crayons, so I heard they had plentiful amounts there.
No, seriously, why did you join? Everyone has their own story. What'd you do? What were you doing?
You know, I was in college at the time when 9/11 happened. In fact, I had slept in because I had gone out the night before for beers, and I was getting up and I saw the World Trade Centers being hit. And so I dropped out of college, joined the Marine Corps. 20 years later, I question whether or not our, you know, soldiers were used for a good purpose there. But nevertheless, we, you know, killed a lot of bad guys and took a lot of bad guys out. But that's why I joined.
Wade, let's shift into what's happening currently with the military. You and I have talked about this before. What they're doing, what they've done, what military leadership has done to our military is beyond belief. The retention crisis is a disaster. People don't talk about it. Everyone talks about recruiting, but retention, the pipe hitters are leaving. Is this something in 4 years that Trump can't or even will reverse? There wasn't a ton of change last time. He looks much more committed this time. What do we expect? What do we need?
I think it'll be a different scenario this time. If you'll remember, the executive order to combat CRT came out right at the end of the administration after Chris Rufo and others had been exposing it. I think that where we're at now, as opposed to 2019, I think a lot of people's eyes are open up to what woke and weaponized bureaucracy is. And it's a really bad problem in DOD. We've got a bunch of left-wing Nancy generals that are wanting to elevate diversity, equity, inclusion, and anti-racism, which is just racism, if you boil it down. And they're doing it for political jockeying, and they're throwing their troops under the bus because they want to get their next promotion and to look good in front of left-wing senators, and that includes some of the Senate on the Republican side as well. And we've got a dangerous, toxic culture, and I think that President Trump understands that there needs to be a cultural change in the military. I think he's probably right now weighing through all of his various options of who's going to take on DOD. I think he fully understands that we need to embrace more of a realism approach. And I think it's going to be a combination of realism and restraint, ending forever wars, saving our treasure for American families instead of spending it abroad, and then going at this neo-Marxist rot that's in all of the bureaucracies, including within our admirals and generals. And frankly, I will stand up and applaud very loudly when the first general or admiral gets fired for embracing all this nonsense.
Wade, can you explain to people who don't understand, how did we get so many of these generals and admirals? Because especially if you're a civilian, you look at these guys and the uniform looks good. And of course, all of them have 8,000 medals and ribbons now. And you look and you think, wow, gosh, what a warrior. I can't imagine what a resume those ribbons and medals must reflect. How did we get so many of these guys who are just poisonous filth that lead our military? It's crazy to people who don't get how this happened.
Well, sure. So, well, you know, first of all, if an officer sneezes in the right direction, they get some sort of medal these days. But to the broader point that you're making, at a certain point, especially in the officer ranks, you get your continuing education, you go get a master's degree, they go to places like Harvard and Yale, where it's just left-wing nonsense. And then I think that, you know, to get past a certain rank, they have to be approved by Congress. And in fact, last year or maybe 2 years ago, Senator Tommy Tuberville kind of famously was holding a lot of these promotions because they were embracing all sorts of nonsense, including woke ideology and abortion policies. And so these senators play the game. They see what DC culture is, and they just basically throw this country under the bus and say, if I want to get my next promotion, I'm going to embrace this Marxist nonsense. And they just, like I said, they throw us all under the bus because they want to get that next star or their next, you know, the become a colonel and or whatever it is. And I think a lot of them just don't care about America as much as they should, and they're kind of protecting their own hide, and they're throwing our culture, our country, our troops under the bus in order to attain it. And frankly, it's sad, and that's why we need to start cleaning house. I would love to see the DOJ start prosecuting some of these generals who have, seemingly violated the law by promoting people on the basis of race and sex, which should be illegal. I think that the military actually might have an exemption on that, but nevertheless, the signal needs to be sent, and these people need to be fired that are responsible for it.
No question. We're already getting reports of informal meetings, of course, Wade, in the Pentagon, of people talking about how they can challenge Donald Trump, which is odd because last time I checked, he was the commander in chief. How much trouble is Trump going to have if he's committed to do so, and he appears to be? How much trouble is he going to have cleaning this thing out?
It's a monumental task. If anyone can do it, I think that Trump can. And I think that he will surround himself with the right people. But remember, the intel state, the national security state, and the defense industrial complex have a lot of reasons for this not to happen. And so to the degree that they have all of their different machinations and lobbyists in D.C. and Hill staffers that want us to be in every single conceivable war possible, they're going to find reasons to throw wrenches in all of these plans. And so, you know, I would just encourage the president. I'm excited that he is going to be the president once again, to just plow through all of that nonsense and empower the people that he puts there to carry out his charge and to fundamentally reshape these institutions so they're not, frankly, an enemy of the United States any longer and actually looking out for the best interests of, you know, the common cause of what, you know, government is supposed to be achieving for the American people.
Wade, there's already been a bunch of chatter. You never know what to believe about the Israel-Hamas thing getting wrapped up, maybe, hopefully, the Ukraine-Russia thing getting wrapped up, maybe, hopefully. Now, how much of that stuff is realistic? Surely Trump's not going to walk in there and world peace is going to descend on us.
I think it will be light years ahead of where it's at now. If you remember in his last term, a lot of what the foreign policy deep state and the establishment said was impossible, he got a lot of it done. And it kind of shocked all of them, the state of affairs in which the world was in towards the end of his first term. And then, of course, it all kind of fell to, you know, total crap, excuse me, in the ensuing 4 years after that under the Biden administration. I think that there's something to be said when you have a leader who is unpredictable and may, just because you piss him off, he may go to war with you or he may take out one of your top generals. And Trump has that in foreign policy terms. It's called strategic ambiguity. Foreign leaders don't really know what Trump's going to do. And that is a superpower if you're President Trump. They're going to start calibrating their decision making to not want to offend or piss off Trump, because Trump has the keys to the car now, and he can make or break a lot of these nations. He can cut them off. He can impose 100% tariffs. He can cut off all of our trade. He can isolate them. He can put sanctions on them. And they know that. So I think that that's one reason you're starting to see a shift already in conversations. Now, will it happen overnight? Probably not. But the fact that you're already seeing these discussions materialize out of the ether days after the election was decided, I don't think that that's a coincidence. I think it's the strategic ambiguity of having a president who they really don't know what he's going to do, and that kind of scares him. And that's a great position. That's a great power to have if you're a president.
Yeah, it certainly is. Wade, brother, Semper Fi, and happy birthday. I appreciate you, man. All right. Well, don't think we're done. We have even another bet for you before we do that. Maybe you're sitting there thinking, watching all these vets is raising my T levels. You'd be wrong, though. You need a male vitality stack from Chalk to raise your T levels, you see. Chalk is natural herbal supplements, not just male vitality stacks. They have endless natural herbal supplements, highest quality I've ever seen in my life. I love them so much. I love the company. I love the people. They're hardcore anti-communists just like us. And they have female vitality stacks. Ladies, you tired of needing a cup of coffee at 2 in the afternoon? They have male vitality stacks. CHOQ.com is where you need to go. Go look at what they have. Just go look. They have huge discounts on subscriptions. Chuck.com/JesseTV. Go save yourself some money and feel like $1 million. We'll be back. Veterans Day is a special day on this show, always has been a special day. We like to try to do more than just thank a veteran. We like to try to have some on. Let's hear from them. Let's talk to them. As you can probably tell, that's going to be a theme on today's show. And joining me now, somebody, he's a personal friend of mine and has been for many years, Sean Parnell, Bronze Star, Purple Heart, U.S. Army captain, and author of the book Outlaw Platoon, if you want to hear exactly what he went through in Afghanistan for this country. Okay, Sean, first of all, tell us about the Army's 10th Mountain Division. That sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, well, there are two seasons there. It's stationed up at Fort Drum, New York. Two seasons there, July and winter. I found that out the hard way when I was a brand new second lieutenant coming out of Ranger School. Failed the first time through Ranger School. Got probably one of my last choices in duty assignments because come to find out, again, nobody really wanted to go to Fort Drum. But when I got there, I realized it was the best kept secret in the Army. And the 10th Mountain Division was a light infantry division that had the moniker, at least back in the day, of being the most deployed unit in the Army. And back then, that's exactly what I wanted. I don't know why I felt that way, but I was just, you know, after 9/11, I was just chomping at the bit to get in the fight as fast as humanly possible to take the fight to the enemy. I mean, looking back, stupid, naive in so many ways, just a young kid. But we had units in the 10th Mountain Division that specialized in Iraq, and one brigade, the Spartan Brigade, that specialized in Afghanistan. And I was in the Spartan Brigade, and our motto was, with your shield or on it. In other words, come home victorious or come home dead. Again, I didn't really understand that back in the day, but looking back, I was very proud to be associated with that unit.
Tell people, because I only did a little bit of this in the Marines. Too bad for you, Sean. Tell people what it's like to train in the mountains. Before we even get to Afghanistan, the mountains are just a completely different animal, aren't they?
Well, yeah, they are. And the crazy thing about that is that leave it to the Army to station somebody at Fort Drum where it's just flat as far as the eye can see. But what it was in Fort Drum was freezing cold. And so the 10th Mountain Division was really, what really helped us was training in extreme cold weather climates. So when you're operating at 14,000 feet, and that's where we were in the valleys in Afghanistan at 14,000 feet, it can get pretty freaking cold up there. So being able to train in that type of environment and learn to operate seriously, 15, 16, 17 degrees below zero in that type of weather in a combat environment, I mean, Jesse, I think it saved lives in combat. You train hard, you know, you train like you fight. And then when you get to combat, the hope is that it pays off dividends when you get there. And in my case, I think it did.
Sean, it's hard to explain for those who haven't gone through it. And oftentimes, women have a harder time understanding this who haven't gone through it. How much suffering together brings men together? It helps you come together as a unit. I've told these stories before on the radio, on here, various times where you suffer together and you end up just getting closer and closer through all that. Why?
You know what I think it is, Jesse, is like when you go into basic training, you go in as an individual, you know, they're shaving everybody's head. They're, you know, you're only as fast as your slowest person. If somebody falls out in a run, the whole platoon stops, turns around, puts the guy to the front. You know, you become part of a team, something larger than yourself. And then you get to your unit and you shoot, move, and communicate together as a team. And that motto, being a part of something bigger than yourself, being part of something that's a collective, is really just beat into you. So you almost change from just being an individual to a part of something bigger than just you. So you shoot, move, and communicate together as a team in training. And then you go to fight, bleed, and die together in combat. It really does forge this special bond with people that you have there. And Jesse, it really is unlike anything that I've ever experienced before. I was in combat for 16 months with these guys, heavy combat. I was in the light infantry too. And we were outnumbered 10-1 in almost every single engagement that we were in. We were one infantry platoon in almost all of Bermel District and Regional Command East Afghanistan. This was before the surge, right? This was at the height of the Hunt bin Laden, before the surge, before we had tens of thousands of troops there. And I could, you know, I'm the oldest of four siblings. And in many ways, I'm closer with my troops than I am with my own sister and brothers. And it's not because I don't love my sisters and brothers, but it's just because I went through something very, very different with my men. Jesse, it was so crazy that it got to a point where I got to know those men so well I could see them walking away from me under night vision in the middle of the night and know exactly who it was just by the way that they walked. I mean, that's how close you get with those people. And you come to love them, man. And like the crazy thing about it is like, you know, you do these platoon reunions or you talk to your, you know, you talk to people who are in your unit from time to time. And it's like, you know, it could be years, but it's like you just hung out the day before because that bond is just so strong. It never goes away.
Yeah, we just had a little 20-year Marine unit for a reunion for my unit. And we got together and it was exactly like that. It was like we rented a house in the lake and we automatically knew who was gonna cook, who did the dishes. We knew, like we've been there. We've been through it with each other before. It's exactly like that. John, I want you to speak, if you don't mind, to veterans who may be struggling and watching this right now. It's harder over the holidays, it's harder with family, it's hard, and there are a lot of guys, even though we've been back for a long time, who are really, really still struggling with life and getting by. What do you have to say to them?
Well, you know what it is? If we believe that the military trains you to shoot, move, communicate together, and then you fight, bleed, and die together in combat, and then you get out, and the military is like, all right, have a great life, salute, like you're back out into the civilian world by yourself, and it runs contrary to everything that you've just been through. And I always think, Jesse, when someone asks me this question, I struggle with this a lot as well. And I've struggled a lot, you know, throughout the years with this. I'm no different. But what so many men and women struggle with is the next mission coming home. And I remember having a conversation with my buddies from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, sitting around a table in a bar. And they asked me what Afghanistan was like. Of course, they asked me if I'd killed anybody before. And I started telling them the stories of my time in combat. You know, just they're my friends, people I went to elementary school with, high school with, in some cases college. And very soon, Jesse, I realized I was sitting at the table by myself. And, you know, I'm nothing against my buddies. These are depressing stories, and combat stories can be a bit of a buzzkill for people who weren't there. But in that moment, I did with every single member who served in combat, doesn't matter what war you served in. I said to myself, you know what? These civilians will never get it. And I took that pain and I locked it away inside myself. And I promised to never talk about it again unless I spoke to somebody who understood or was there with me. And then I started writing Outlaw Platoon, which is my first book that you referenced. And what I realized when that book came out, I had soldiers and their family members reaching out to me and saying, oh my God, thank you for telling this story. You know, my son, my husband would have never told me this, but now that I know, you know, I can help him. I know what he went through, so I'm better suited now to be that shoulder that he can lean on. And what I realized is that's why it's so critical for veterans to tell their story. You know, but like it's really important, Jesse, to ask why I said, hey, people don't get it. I'm never going to talk about this ever again. It's really important to ask why I did that. Well, you raise your right hand, you volunteer to serve, knowing that you're going to war, and you take an oath to protect people that you love and you care about, your friends and your family. And when soldiers or Marines or anybody who served in the military realizes that their story, just even listening to it, hurts the people that they took an oath to protect, most members of the military will just lock that away and say, you know what, I'll eat the pain myself because I'm going to protect the people that I love and care about. But the problem is that if you lock that stuff up inside of you, it can destroy somebody from the inside out. And it's really important, living in a representative republic, that the people who send politicians to Washington and then politicians then turn around and send our men and women to war, it's really important for the people who sent those politicians to Washington, who sent our men and women to war, to own that war when we come home and help us carry the burden. And that's what I realized in publishing my first book did, is that everybody, every soldier, everybody that's ever served as part of these wars should be out there talking to civilians and people who never served about what it was like. And the reason why that's so important, Jesse, and this is the last thing I'll say, is because it helps educate our society so we don't find ourselves in positions of forever wars like Iraq and Afghanistan for 20 plus years with almost nothing to show for it. We become a smarter society when our men and women come home and educate people about war and conflict.
It's true. It is really true. They are the people who should be speaking the loudest. After all, they have the most invested in this wonderful country. So, Sean, you are the man, as always, my brother. I will talk to you soon. That was good. I knew Sean would be good there. I was going to go talk to him about some political things, but I just thought maybe we should talk to the vets for a minute. All right? All right. Speaking of veterans, Pure Talk, you know their CEO. You know what MACV SOG is, right? You've heard of it. Maybe you've read about it, seen it in the movies. The super-duper special forces ninja types from Vietnam, behind enemy lines, those type guys. You know the CEO of Pure Talk? Two tours, MACV SOG, Vietnam. Why would Pure Talk hire Americans? Nobody does that. When you call Pure Talk, you speak to an American who speaks English. Why would they do that? Oh, Pure Talk is all about America. All about America. Pure Talk gives back to veterans. Pure Talk doesn't give to communist filth causes. You don't need Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile. Take a couple minutes and switch to Pure Talk. You keep your phone. You keep your phone number. It's easy. You just switch your provider. You save money. Switch to Pure Talk. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, obviously, it is Veterans Day, as we mentioned, over the top. And it's more than a day where we just say, you know, thank you for your service. It's more than a day where people like me try to get 10% off in Waffle House. I'm just kidding. I don't know whether Waffle House is doing that, but I bet they are. Let's also remember that people have given up significant parts of themselves, their lives, their bodies for this country, and they deserve an extra thanks, at least, from us today. Joining me now, Marine Corps veteran, Bronze Star recipient, and Semper, he's also a Semper Fi in America's Fund. His name is Eddie Wright. Eddie, Semper Fi, my Marine brother. First of all, what happened to you 20 years ago? Tell us your story. We don't know your story.
Well, Semper Fi, brother, happy birthday. 20 years ago, I was serving as an assistant team leader with 1st Reconnaissance Battalion in Fallujah, Iraq. And during an ambush, I was struck by a rocket-propelled grenade, and that resulted in the immediate amputation of both of my hands. And it was a catastrophic injury, an end to my dream career as a reconnaissance Marine. But, you know, a long road of recovery and a blessed life. 20 years later, here I am, still standing.
It's amazing how many blessings God still pours down on us. Okay, let's rewind a little bit. For those who don't know, recon Marines are a cut above. It's our elite, if you will. Why recon? Who grows up thinking about being recon? Tell me about it.
Well, ever since I was a child, I wanted to be a Marine. And somewhere around middle school, I started to read all kinds of books on the Marine Corps. But I stumbled upon reconnaissance Marines, books written by Marines who served in Vietnam. And I just fell in love. And from then on, I knew that my goal in life was to become a reconnaissance Marine.
Yeah, that's not an easy slog either. I respect it immensely. Okay, so recovery, obviously, cannot possibly be pleasant. Tell me about your treatment. I'm assuming it was VA treatment. Did you feel like you had everything you needed? And what's it like afterwards? How do you adjust to not having hands all of a sudden? What do you do from there? Tell us about it.
Well, my recovery took quite some time. I was an inpatient for 4 months at the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland, and then followed on at Walter Reed, so a combination of both hospitals, 4 months. And then about a year, I was at the Malone House and doing physical therapy, occupational therapy, but I never lost my drive to be a Marine. I just didn't know how I was going to continue in that service. Fortunately, the Marine Corps saw some value in my service, and I was able to spend my last year in the Marine Corps at the basic school in Quantico, Virginia, as an instructor at the Martial Arts Center of Excellence, training Marines. And that was a fantastic way to go out with my boots on. But then I was a civilian. And that world to me was a little bit of a shock. You know, the VA system, for everything that they do, wonderful for us. There are gaps in the system. It is a bureaucratic agency. And so sometimes, many times, it was very frustrating. my needs could be prosthetics, my needs could be maybe counseling, things like that, or just regular medical care. And there are gaps in the system, and that can be tiring and frustrating. And unfortunately, sometimes you have to be your own advocate, and it gets a little old. And that's where organizations like the Semper Fi and America's Fund come through, and they fill in those gaps, and they support us, not just with transition, but they do support for the service members, for our families, and they have a holistic approach, integrative wellness, and it's continued service to us and myself. 20 years later, things come up, life happens, and then when you're a veteran and you have a physical disability, a severe injury that limits you, unless you can find some workarounds, it can be tiring and just that much harder than, say, if you had all your health and all your fingers and your limbs. And so they've really come through. It's like a family. They understand that it's not just one time involvement, that it's a lifetime of involvement, and they have a commitment. They're military spouses that started the organization, that run the organization, the dedicated staff and volunteers all over the country. And they not only support Marines, they support all the service branches and our families and our children. And that's wonderful. That
Yeah,
brings
no
life.
doubt.
Like when you get tired and you're carrying that, you're a Marine, you're carrying your ruck, and you're like, man, I've been rucking for so long. And I guess for people listening, that's your big old backpack. It's heavy, and you get tired, and it's life. You're marching on, you're rucking, and you just sometimes you need a drink of water, you need to sit down, change your socks, take a knee, catch your breath. The Semper Fi and America's Fund is an organization that understands that, and they're there for us. And sometimes you don't even have to reach out, because they're committed and they care about us, and they'll reach out. And it's like they have ESP. They can it happens when you least expect it. And I just am very grateful for an organization like that, and for the Americans in our country that support that organization.
Amen. All you veterans watching right now, if something touched your heart, maybe you're struggling, reach out. Semper Fi and America's Fund. Reach out, see if they can help you. Anyone else who wants to support an organization like that, I would highly encourage you to do so. Eddie Wright, Semper Fi, my brother, and happy birthday once again. Good to talk to you. All right. It's time for Lighten the Mood. Next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And before we get to the video, I can't even decide if it's light. It's funny, but we'll get to that in a second. Before we do that, remember, go subscribe to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/@JesseKellyDC. I know it's a mouthful, so just pick up your phone and scan that QR code. Go subscribe to it. We do some extra things on there, things you won't get here or on the radio anywhere else. So go subscribe. Enjoy it. All right. There are things that we get used to. We've talked about this before, you and I. We grow accustomed to certain things, even terrible things. It's part of the human condition. It's how adaptable we are. We've kind of accepted, you and me, we accepted a while ago that the President of the United States of America is not a fully functional adult, and that his witch wife was going to run him for re-election again, knowing he wasn't a functional adult. Like, those two things are both horrible, and we've just kind of like baked it into the cake. And now Trump won, so we're all happy, but we don't even think about it anymore. Did you see Joe Biden walking through the sand? And did you see Jill Biden when Joe started to stumble? That man has been commander in chief for the last 4 years. I can't believe we're all still alive. Jeez. Anyway, I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.